City Sport Pods.
In 2016, Hibernian ended their 114-year wait to lift the Scottish Cup in the most dramatic of fashion. Alan Stubbs was the manager who led the team to glory at Hampden in that famous 3-2 win over Rangers. And both he and star midfielder John McGinn join us on this edition of Curry Club, the Scottish Football Sessions. Alan, John, really good to see you. Thank you very much for coming on the show, especially to talk about this subject, that incredible day in 2016. I assume it never gets old, Alan.
No, it doesn't. Obviously, it was such a momentous occasion, especially, you know, from a Hibs point of view, it will be one that will be there in the history books for a long time, you know, 119 years. And then, you know, one of the things I go back to is that one of my first questions in press conferences was, is this the year?
Yeah.
And I always looked upon that when the reporters were asking that, is that like, it was a bit of a sarcastic question because, you know, Hibs had been looked upon as a team that got to, they were a nearly team.
Yeah.
My response straight away was, well, why not? And there was a little bit of a snigger. And listen, I didn't know what was going to ultimately happen in the end. But it was nice to actually see them same reporters in the press conference after the final whistle.
You've done a lot, of course, in your career since then. But is it still up there as one of the best days, John?
I don't think the situation will ever be matched. I don't think I'll ever be in that scenario again, especially after losing the League Cup final, losing the playoff final so close to it. I'll never be in that situation again, and I'll never experience any celebrations like it. So I have been fortunate enough to experience some brilliant days, but I just don't think that one will ever be matched.
I'll get to the final, right? But let's just put it all in context, because I guess it's easy to forget now. When you joined the football club, I assume they said to you that the goal is, forget about the cups, take this team back to the top flight.
The goal was to try and restore a bit of stability.
Yeah.
I think first of all, it was because, you know, there was a lot of turmoil off the pitch. Mm. There was a lot of unrest. You know, the fans wanted the board out. You know, there was a lot of pressure on Rod at the time. And Leanne had just arrived maybe 6 months before that during the previous season. And she'd made a big decision in terms of getting rid of Terry Butcher. And for some reason, she come across me. Mm. And
how did that happen?
I got a phone call to ask me if I'd like to go and meet them. They were doing interviews and they were holding them at a hotel in Lyme. And I said, yeah, I'd love to. Went along. And I really liked what they had in mind. What they were wanting to put into place was very similar to what I was involved with Everton. They said all the right things. I think I said the right things. And on the way home, I got a phone call and said, listen, we'd love to appoint you.
And it was a crazy time in Scottish football as well, because getting out of the Championship was not easy, was it?
No, you know, I think up to now, it was the most difficult Championship that there's ever been on record. Yeah. You know, you had the Hearts in there, you had the Rangers in there, which is just not heard of.
Yeah.
And then there was obviously ourselves that basically had six players. Mm. You know, but I looked at that as a positive, because it was really a blank piece of paper to try and, you know, bring the club back to where it rightfully belonged.
In that first season, you got to a Scottish Cup semi-final amidst everything else. I don't want to cover everything in that first season. And obviously it didn't happen for you. Was that the first time you came across the kind of this so-called curse that was on the football club, that you cannot win the Scottish Cup?
Yeah, my main concern with that was how we performed on the day.
Yeah.
You know, because we were a Championship side in the final of a League Cup final with all the big boys had been in. Yeah. And, you know, we actually performed well on the day.
You're talking the League Cup.
Yeah.
But even your first season, you went far in the Scottish Cup, didn't you?
Yeah, I think we got to the semi-final. Yeah.
Falkirk, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, cups are always a bit special. Cups really can suit teams that have, I think, individuals. Mm. Because on the day, they can win them one-off games.
Yeah.
And what we wanted to try and do, we wanted to try and first and foremost was give the fans the club back.
Yeah.
Because the fans felt a disconnect between themselves and the board. And I think early on, we slowly but surely did that. We tried to get to all the supporters clubs, tell them what we were going to do, and even invited them in to see what we were doing. And that was a real positive, and the feedback from all the supporters clubs was really, really positive, and that was just a first step.
So that first season you were at the club, you went well in the Scottish Cup, made the semi-final.
Yeah.
Was this the first time that you maybe heard about this so-called curse that was on the football club, that they just couldn't win the Scottish Cup? Do you remember it being mentioned?
Oh, it was mentioned from early doors, from when I first went in.
Right.
You know, whether it was supporters, whether it was the staff, whether it was the kit man, you know, we were told of it very, very quickly. And that was one of the things that I'd noticed and all, even the sense of it only happens to Hibs. Mm-hmm. It seemed to be something that resonated with a lot of the staff. And they, and I got the impression that I needed to change not just the playing squad, but also the mentality in the players to think that they were good enough to stop this. Because even speaking to like the kit man, Tam, he would always go, oh, we're cursed. We're cursed, you know. And Tam was a great guy, but I had to overcome that, because the kit men are sometimes the most important, some of the most important people in the clubs, because they speak to all the players, and you don't want them giving the players negative vibes of, oh, I remember when we got to that cup final, you got beaten that one, and we got beaten that one. Before you know it, you know, it runs through the club.
Yeah, because 2012, and we know, I don't think on this podcast we can mention 2012, we know what happened in cup finals in the past. It helps when you sign good players. After one season, John McGinn joins Hibs. You can tell me how it all happened in a minute, but what was your first sort of memory of the club coming to ask you, would you like to move?
I think I said no a couple of times.
Did you?
I had left St Mirren, we got relegated. A terrible season, both for me and for the club. So confidence was pretty much at an all-time low. I still had a high compensation fee and value. And I decided I need a fresh start. St Mirren were fine with that. We had a good relationship. I was there 13 years. And eventually I was at a contract for about a month, I think. Month and a bit. And nobody was willing to pay the transfer fee. At that moment, Hibs been in the Championship.
Seems crazy to be saying that.
Crazy. No, they couldn't afford it at that time. Yeah. But Graham, to be fair, spoke to me a few times. Graham Matthew, who was head of recruitment at the time, he spoke to me a few times and just said, "Would you be interested?" And I wasn't too keen to drop down to the Championship. But then my ego got a wee slap a couple of times when nobody was willing to pay. Hearts had contacted me. Robbie Nielsen phoned me when I was in Santa Ponsa saying, "Do you want to come to Hearts?" I said yes. Never heard from him ever again.
Oh, this could have been a different story.
I know, thank goodness. And then Dundee United had spoken to my agent. I thought, right, I'm going there. They signed Rodney Snyder instead. So I then went to Houston in America, phoned Sandy Stewart, who I worked with at St Mirren briefly. I said, "Do you need a midfielder?" And they said, "Oh, come over." I went over there, I loved it, and I decided I wanted to go, but...
Is that Owen Coyle over there at the time?
Owen Coyle, aye. Just shouting tournament all the time. But it was brilliant. The heat was something I didn't think I would enjoy, but I quite liked it. But then some red tape fell through. St Mirren were willing to do a cut price deal, which worked for everyone, and thankfully in the end it did work for everyone. And I remember the gaffer phoning me when I was at Cabo Roundabout.
A no-brainer for you.
Yeah. You know, I'd to be fair to Graham Matthew at the time, he did a lot of work on that deal, and in terms of John, and we sat down for a number of hours watching the clips of John, and I asked, you know, we sat there with my staff, and we all came to the same conclusion that, you know, yes, we definitely want to sign him. There was things that I seen in the clip that I knew John was going to be a good player. I don't think you can ever envisage how good you think someone is going to be, but you can see the potential there. And obviously, you know, when he came in, he was a breath of fresh air, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch, you know, and every game he went from strength to strength very quickly. Mm. You know, he was realistically, he was the talisman of the team.
What kind of a dressing room did you walk into? Because you would have known clearly what had just happened to Hibs and still in the championship again.
I was nervous because I hadn't been at another club, whether that was youth team, anything. I was really nervous. I actually drove through to Edinburgh with my mum and dad. I remember that. I didn't know what to sign. I didn't know what to sign, but normally you go into a football club excited, and I wasn't, and that sounds disrespectful. I just wasn't sure.
Yeah.
And then I remember.
Because you didn't know anything else.
But I remember leaving, and I was signed. We sat down with the gaffer, Taff and John, and the gaffer always said to me, I don't know if you remember, I promise I'll make you a better player. That's all he kept saying, promise I'll make you a better player, and thankfully that was the case. But the dressing room, honestly, no disrespect to any other dressing room that I've been in the current one, but it just won't be matched. There was characters everywhere alongside Dave Gray. Dave always seemed angry. He did, but he kind of held it all together because you had James Keaton's there, Jason Cummings, madmen, but brilliant guys at the same time, and it was just a brilliant combination. And initially, I was in the Glasgow Casco, as they call it, me, Scott Allen, Dylan McGeoch, Fivey, and James Keaton's. But I knew if I had to give it a right good bash, I had to move through, so that's probably the best decision I ever made, moving through. So, no regrets at all, and delighted.
What a bunch of characters you assembled.
Yeah. I did, but I signed them because of their ability.
Yeah.
You know, but if you get a bit of personality and character on top of that, it's even better. Mm-hmm. You know, because they end up running the dressing room themselves. Mm. There would have been times where I've had to go in once or twice, and there wouldn't have been many, just to say, you know, put a lid on it. But they knew what they had to do. Yeah. You know, and very rarely did I have to venture into the changing room. And if it did, it was only because something funny had happened and I was going in to see what it was. And that was probably quite a few times a week. It was great, because the one thing, I think it's great having ability, but the players have to bring their imagination, personality, all these things onto the pitch. When times are tough on a pitch, you see the personalities of the players and how closely we're pulled together.
Yeah. Because it was a season of ups and downs, wasn't it? I mean, obviously the ultimate high in the end, but it didn't all go to plan. So you needed the characters, you needed the personality you just mentioned.
Yeah, it was, you know, obviously in the final season in terms of the cup, we'd got to the League Cup final, which we'd lost to Ross County. We'd actually played really well, you know, but we made two mistakes for the goals, which were punished.
And it was late and painful as well.
And it was, you know, but, you know, they competed again with a Premiership team.
Yeah.
So we knew we were going in the right direction. And then obviously our main goal was to come up through automatically. And unfortunately, we didn't do that. We got beat by Falkirk in the semi-final of the playoffs. Bizarrely, you know, it was the first game, you know, at home, we've absolutely battered them.
I remember it well.
We should have had a penalty, which I don't know to this day how it's still not been given.
You mean the scooped handball?
Yes, that scooped full hand, which was, you know, was right in front of the
You've
referee.
You've been a proponent of VAR ever since.
Yeah, and he chose not to give it. And that was to make it 3-1.
Yeah.
And I honestly believe we were rampant at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it was going to be a 4-1, 5-1 game. Didn't, and Falkirk did what they did well. They stayed in the game, and then a set piece at the very end, long ball, and then they've got an equaliser, 2-2. And you're thinking, how on earth have we come off that game 2-2?
And this is right before the cup final.
It is, well. You know, and then we go to obviously to Falkirk, and we get an early goal, which I think great, set us up, and then they score with a speculative shot from outside the box near the end, and unfortunately. You know, we didn't achieve what we wanted to do, and this was the week before the Scottish Cup final.
How low was the dressing room after that, given you all knew that was the real aim for that season?
Aye, that was the target for us. Yeah. We were all reminded of how important the Scottish Cup was, but our target was to get promoted, not only for the club, but for selfish reasons. Yeah. All of those players you mentioned had a point to prove we all wanted to be in the top flight of Scottish football, and we'd failed, really. There was a bit of injustice. We felt the injustice from the penalty, but Falkirk was always a tough place to go.
Yeah.
And when they got that long throw, Will Vaux flung it in. But they were a decent team.
Yeah.
It didn't make it any easier, but we certainly deserved, in my opinion, over the two legs to be in the final. So it was low, I remember it. But that's where Dave, Paul Hanlon, Lewis Stevenson, they were amazing in the next few days, and they just basically told us, listen, this can all be forgotten about. And
do you believe in fate? Do you believe had you won that game, you might not have won the cup final?
No, I don't believe in fate. I believe that the party wouldn't have been as good.
Yeah.
I well, maybe if we'd went through, we'd maybe, I don't know, would we have won? I don't know. I'll never be able to tell. I was shocked that Kilmarnock beat Falkirk so easily, because that surprised me. But it certainly made us more determined to win the final, that's for sure.
I'll get to the final, I promise. We'll talk about the big day. But let's just work through the cup run then.
Yeah.
Some games more notable than others. Raith Rovers, pretty straightforward first up. You beat them 2-0.
Yeah.
And then out of the hat comes Hearts in the next round. What are you thinking at that point? Because they're back in the top flight.
Being really honest, I was delighted. Because I thought it's a great tie. I wasn't fearful of Hearts, even though I knew they were a strong team. I knew we could beat them. I think in that season and all, our record against them was decent. I think we were unbeaten against them. I think if I'm correct in saying in that season.
Yeah.
And that was the start of the mindset changing. You know, I think we were going to, especially Hearts, because they'd had the upper hand over Hibs over a number of years, and you could see the self belief in the team. You know, and I know for a fact when we went there, the players would have known we're in for a really tough game here.
Yeah.
But
you were 2-0 down.
We were 2-0 down, and we were actually by far the better team. Mm. And I don't want that sound like sour grapes. When you're 2-0 down, more often than not, you deserve to be.
Yeah.
We'd actually played Hearts off the pitch up to then.
Did it feel like that?
No, because sometimes as a player, you don't see or feel what's going on. But I remember at half-time, Gaffer, Taff and John being calm. I was like, if only it was always like this at 2-0. Yeah. But they were calm, they're just like, keep doing it. So normally you're expecting something to change or things to happen. I think we did make a sub at one point, but it was just basically keep doing what you're doing, you'll get chances and you just need to take them, basically. So it was pretty calm, and that certainly helped us the second half.
What do you remember of the last 10 minutes?
I remember the half-time talk so vividly. I remember talking to the players and saying, listen, yous are doing really well. Yous don't deserve to be 2-0 down. The next goal is so important. If we get the next goal, you'll go on to win this game. We got the goal, and then come to the last 10 minutes, because we were so in the game, the second half just seemed to fly by on the sideline. And then, you know, I actually didn't realise, you know, the time of the second goal equaliser.
So Jason Cummings scored, didn't he? We thought about 10 to go.
Yeah, because I still thought there was plenty of time, because obviously we had such the upper hand. You could feel the heart support. They were getting on the back of their team. You know, there was a lot of groans, and every time misplaced passes, you could feel it, and you could sense it all building for us to get that equaliser. And obviously we get that, which for me, they deserve nothing more than that from that game.
Paul Hanlon, extra time.
Oh, you can't write it, honestly. I just remember taking the corner, moving the microphone. You don't get much room at Tynecastle, but I was bricking it.
You get dogs abuse as well.
dogs abuse, yeah. No, but you're so close to the fans, and you can hear them. Don't hit the first man. And you think if you hit the first man here, it's done. You're out, basically. Yeah. But managed to put a decent ball in, great header for Big Daz, and that'll probably be Paul's best moment in a Hibs jersey. And the celebrations kind of showed the kind of togetherness we had in the dressing room.
Did you have to be a little careful though? Because it was a draw.
I know it was a draw, but it was weird. It was a weird feeling, because we knew at Easter Road we would beat them. I don't know why, it just when you came back to Easter Road.
But those dressing rooms at Tynecastle are close.
Yeah.
The older dressing rooms as they were at the time. They're right outside each other. They must have heard you celebrating. Did you wonder, as a manager, don't go over the top here?
Not at all, because we knew for a fact if it was on the other foot, they would have done exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, and they'd had, you know, the upper hand, and, you know, we've heard the music. Well, we hadn't that season because they didn't get any results, but we'd been told that, you know, they'd have the music blaring when they had results. And we knew, walking off the pitch, well, I certainly knew, looking at the players, is that they got so much belief out of that result that going into the second leg, I knew there was one team that was looking forward to it and one team that wasn't.
Loads of players have said since, Alan, that those last 10 minutes, some of the most nerve-wracking of their lives, but it seems like you were quite measured, even in those last few minutes. I can't imagine you being measured at that point. But
I think because of what I was seeing on the pitch, that gave me a calmness because I knew the players were in the game, and I knew with the momentum that they had at that time, they were creating chances. Hearts weren't. They had the occasional drift up the park where they'd have, you know, a half chance. They didn't really hurt us. It was all us. You know, it was just momentum after momentum. It was wave of attack after wave of attack. You know, and I would have loved the goal to have come a lot earlier. Don't get me wrong. You know, but
you might have gone on to win it.
Everyone walking up that pitch, it felt like a win.
Yeah.
You know, and that was huge.
What about the replay then? Jason Cummings. Then he gets sent off later on, I think.
No, we started that game like house on fire. I can't remember that. Maybe Big Marv. I think Big Marv that night, he was brilliant, but he was doing a motivational speech before the game. I think basically saying is they don't fancy this one bit. And I remember the Edinburgh derbies at night at Easter Road, there's something just different about it.
It's an amazing game, isn't it?
Aye, but it was 1-0. That could have been any score that night. We absolutely battered them. And it was just, that was the first time I had heard Sunshine on Leaf, that was superb. That was a great night, and we deserved more goals, definitely.
Mm. Another brilliant performance. You loved those derbies, didn't you?
Yeah, you know what? Being realistic, Darryl, I enjoyed managing that group of players.
Yeah.
Because I knew what I was getting. I knew where they were going. You know, and you can talk about afterwards and stuff, and in terms of us not achieving what our main goal was, and that was promotion. It was probably the most given thing ever that the following season they would get promoted. No, not being funny, but if I was still the manager, I honestly believe that we would have been promoted by January. That's the way I felt about it. And I've always said since I made a mistake by running, but that's not what we're here to talk about.
But maybe we'll get to that one. We'll get back to that later on.
But I had so much belief in the players. Yeah. They give me belief, you know, and I'd like to think that I give them a bit of belief to go and express themselves on the pitch. They were just a really, really great bunch of lads to coach.
BT Sport Pods. So you've knocked out Hearts, then you get Inverness, who I'm pretty sure were cup holders, by the way, that season. And Easter Road first up, and they also take you to a replay. What do you remember of that game?
The one thing that, as a group, what we struggled with was sometimes being the favourites. So we were playing a team from the Premier League, but we were favourites. We'd been playing well in the league. Inverness hadn't been doing as well in the league, so we were favourites. I remember it being freezing. It was on BBC. Just that there was a number of reasons why we didn't turn up, but that was probably our downfall. We should have taken care of them in the first leg, and we had a few good chances to do that, but we didn't like doing it the easy way, so we ended up in a replay up the road. But that was certainly the one thing as a group we probably could have done better.
You win the replay up north. Anthony Stokes?
Yep.
Bringing him into that dressing room was just, obviously we know what happened in the end, but what an addition, because it was January, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was from an ability point of view, bringing him into the dressing room was a no-brainer. Mm. From a personality point of view, there was the question marks, because obviously, you know, he was different. Mm. You know, and I was mindful of bringing someone like Stokesy into the dressing room, whether it would disrupt chemistry that was already in there, because he was an individual, didn't necessarily, you know, and I knew the baggage that potentially it brought in terms of sometimes not being a training, sometimes wanting the days off.
Maybe media attention is what comes with that.
And the thing which probably made me accept that was that the players were okay with that.
Did you speak to them first?
I didn't speak to the players first. I spoke with Dave a couple of times in terms of how it was, and he said, and he turned around and said, you know, not a problem, because I think they, first and foremost, they respect them from as a player,
yeah,
and his ability, what he could bring. It was just whether it was just about me not letting him overstep the mark, for better word, take the Mickey, you know, and that was the most important thing from it.
How did players feel when he was joining?
I was buzzing. He did take the mickey sometimes, but I'd watched him for years playing for Celtic, so I thought I was excited to play alongside him. I'd heard the stories about off the park, what he could get up to and that, but it was good. There was sometimes he did take the mick, saying his boiler was broken and stuff. Some classic stories, but that was just Stokes. I think everyone just
boiler break.
I don't know.
He's got a lot of boilers.
It was never fixed.
No, but he made Jason look like an angel that way. But his ability wasn't in question, and he just loved playing football. That was the main thing.
And he'd been at Hibs before as well.
But once he was at the training pitch, it was just one of us. And he would stay out for ages, and you'd have to kind of force him to go back in, but no, he was good. And in the end, he probably didn't start well, but he wasn't fit.
No.
So he didn't start well, but eventually, like nights like that night, he was unstoppable.
He gets you through that tie. Certainly helps get you through that tie. Yeah. But then the goalkeeping crisis comes.
Well, we're playing Inverness, and obviously our keeper gets booked for time wasting, when actually his contact lens had fell out.
He was searching for it on the pitch.
He was looking for it on the pitch, and the referees booked him for time wasting and didn't realise what was happening. And then, obviously, he's then suspended for the semi final.
This is Mark Oxley.
And then we're scrambling around, and on the bus on the way home, I'm speaking with George Craig and obviously Graham Matthew, and I'm saying, we need a keeper. You know, where can we get one from? So anyway, Graham the following day was going through all his contacts, coming to me with, what about this one, I've got this, and I said, no, don't fancy that one, don't fancy this one, don't fancy that one. And then we were getting towards nothing. We are literally starting to scrape the barrel. And then next minute, Graham's gone, well, there's Conrad Logan at Leicester, and he's been on the bench hundreds of times. You know, but he's had a few injuries, and he's only just come back from.
He hadn't played in 16 months.
From a long-term injury, and I've gone, well, we've got no choice. Let's just have a look at him and see if we can. So we said I can get him into training. So anyway, he's turned up, and I've thought, oh my God, you know, actually just looking at him, he wasn't in the best of shape.
I'm trying to be
very kind to him here. Yeah. He didn't look good. And then the next minute, he put his training kit on, and it was even worse. And I thought to myself, I looked at Graham and I said, Graham, what on earth are we doing? And then he goes into training. He's a really good talker. He's making saves. It's taking him a while to get off from some of the saves. but he actually did all right.
Yeah.
And I've had a conversation with him. And I said, Conrad, listen, I said, I'm willing to give it a go. You need to lose a lot of weight. I said, we need to try and get the pounds off you as quickly as we possibly can.
We
didn't have much time. And I said, because at the moment, says you're a risk to being injured because you're just carrying that much excess weight. And he was totally on board. He said, yeah, no problem. He said, anyway, his training got better. He started to lose the weight. And then before you know it, the game's upon you.
Yeah. The semi-final against Dundee United.
Yeah. And, you know, everyone's... who from the outside is going, Conrad, where's this guy come from? And there, obviously, we've had to arrange for a bigger shirt because it was baggy out, and then you could see him running on the pitch that, you know,
how did you boys feel about him?
No, on his first day training, I wasn't in. I was away with Scotland at the time.
Right.
But I used to play Call of Duty with Jason and Keats at night and Dylan. So I'll never forget it. We're on Call of Duty. Keats went, you'll no guess who our new goalie is, right? He says, Google it, Conrad Logan, right? And he actually looked in reasonable shape. Sorry, Conrad, absolute legend. I still speak to him every now and again. Anyway, but Keats went, I'm doing Keats in as well, by the way. Yeah. Keats went, no, you wait till I see him with his top off. Right? He said, it's even worse when he's in the shower. Oh, no. Right? And then Jace went, good goalie though, by the way. Right? And I just remember him saying that. So then he eventually signed. So I was intrigued, and basically I was, I was still shocked when got to training, which is a lesson probably to all of us. Don't judge a book by its cover, because if it wasn't for him, then you never know.
What about his performance in the semi?
Incredible. Listen, I don't think any of us thought that he was going to have the impact that he did. From the first save to the last save, it was nothing short of remarkable. Well, he was the reason why we got through. There's no doubt about that. You know, he made
Alan Cole was your goalkeeping coach, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He apparently went over to him ahead of the penalties and he said, we've done our research in Dundee United. We know which way they go, sort of thing. And he said he's not interested.
Yeah.
Did his own thing. Is that right?
I don't know. I didn't. If that was the case, then I didn't know that. And I'm actually probably glad that he didn't listen to Alan. No. It was as if like there was a man possessed in the shirt that day.
Yeah. It was inspired.
It was. And like, I think there was probably, and I'm going to be honest here, there was probably a lot of people who were looking at him in the top, actually probably sniggering, you know, and thinking, the state of that. And I apologise for that, for them words in terms of describing him. But yeah. Conrad Logan was one of the, well, he was the reason why we got through to the Scottish Cup final. There was no doubt about that. He not just lifted the players, he lifted the support as well on that day.
Yeah.
If people were talking about him for the wrong reasons before the game, they were talking about him for the right reasons after the game.
He played 8 games for the club. I think there's a song about him. There's a supporters club named after him. I think that sums it all up.
Yeah.
But before the heroics, the penalty shootout, the game should have been over. Then you've got a penalty. What is going through your mind, Jason Cummings, over that penalty?
I had a feeling. I had a feeling it was going to chip it. I don't know why. I just knew something different was coming. And there was no surprise whatsoever. I think he was going to kill him. He was going to kill him at half-time. I wasn't actually that, like, obviously I was annoyed because we only 1-0 up, but it was just Jason that you just kind of got used to.
And he'd missed an important penalty by the way, a few years prior for the club as well.
Aye.
The relegation season as well. But as the manager, you see the opportunity to go 1-up at Hampden and he goes for the penalty.
Donald, I wasn't there. I wouldn't want to say I wasn't there. I went in to the toilet and when the penalty happened. And then as I was running in, I heard the cheer. And then as I got into the dressing room, I don't know who it was there, I said, what's happened? He went, you've got a penalty. So anyway, I've gone to the toilet to have a wee. And as I'm running back out, I've heard like a groan. And I thought, oh God. And as I got to the bench, I've gone, what happened? And I remember John saying, you don't want to know. And I thought, what? And he's gone, he's only done a Panenka. And I thought, oh no. I said, anyway, so I've gone down to the touchline then and I've like just carried it on. And like, I'm thinking before half time, do I have a go at him or not? And I thought, well, what's the point? It's happened, it's gone. He's got another 45 minutes to redeem himself. Because I can imagine, I knew for a fact that some of the players wouldn't have been happy in terms of how he's done it. But that was Jason.
I assume you knew he was on penalties.
Yeah.
That was decided.
That was Jason. Jason was like that. You know, he does the unpredictable.
Yeah.
You can't knock someone because if that goes in, everyone's talking about, how cool and calm is that?
Didn't cost you in the end.
No, it didn't, thankfully.
The players kept their nerve during the penalty shootout.
No, they did. You know, and obviously Conrad makes a couple of saves. Yeah. We keep our cool. Jason, to be fair to him.
Yeah.
Has the courage to step up and take another one. Gladly to say, didn't do a Panenka this time.
Had you told him at that point?
No, I didn't, because I'm not in that position. Yeah. When, you know, it's very difficult. When anyone who steps up to take a penalty, I take my hat off to them.
Yeah.
You know, they deserve a lot of credit for it.
You did hold your nerve. What was it like?
I know, but that was horrible, because it was one of the games where it was like the Inverness one, because we had played Dundee United, the same Dundee United team in the League Cup.
Yeah.
And hammered them.
3-0, I think.
3-0. Aye, so we hammered them. So we were expected to win. We were rotten. We didn't really deserve to go through. With the exception of the penalty, we didn't deserve to go through. But that game was special for a number of reasons. One, Bale and Jason it. And secondly, Conrad's emotion in the dressing room after was... I think he got a bit upset. He'd obviously been through a lot in football. Obviously, people writing him off and stuff. So seeing him after the game was worth it, definitely.
Did he speak, or was it just emotions?
No, he was crying. Yeah, I remember him crying. He was emotional, I think. It'd been that long since he'd played, since he'd played football, so I think the buzz was just was brilliant for him. And then after that, we realised we were in the final and delighted.
Yeah. And then you find out you get Rangers as well in the final, team that are in your division.
Yeah.
And the build up to the game, probably every interview, everyone's mentioned that maybe the cup final, Hibs back in the cup final. Can you finally end the 114 years of hurt? You've gone through all that again.
Yeah, personally, I was wanting obviously Celtic because of obviously my links, and I knew I had a few of the lads in the team with Celtic fans as well.
But you'd done well against Rangers that season. Yeah, you'd beaten them a couple of times.
Yeah, but I think now when I look back, obviously if we would have played Celtic, it would have been, you know, Celtic were the top team then. Yeah. I think it all seemed to fall in place for us with Rangers because we knew we could beat Rangers on the day. Yeah. You know, I think that season. I think we'd beat them twice and they'd beat us twice.
Yeah, you won it twice at home at Easter Road against them.
You know, so it was they were very level or even the games, and I don't know what it was and I don't know why, but I just knew that we'd win the game. Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. You know, it's these things happen in football. You know, sometimes as a player, you wake up and you know you're going to win that day, or you know you're going to have a good performance. I just knew, even after all the adversity in terms of what had happened the week before, I knew we'd win.
In the lead up to it, would you rather have had Rangers or Celtic with the family history and everything else?
No, but I was the same as the gaffer. I wanted Celtic to win, but I would never have told any of my family or my mates or anything, but I was so excited after the game because I thought, what a chance we've got now. Mm-hmm. Probably not the right attitude, should have been the same against Celtic, but it just wasn't. They were going through a period of unrivalled success, and Rangers, we knew we had the beating of them.
Yeah.
If we turned up, they had been really successful in the league, and there was going to be a big gap until the final, and there was just excitement, really. But we had so much to focus on, it wasn't a case of we're thinking about that game, but it was more we can win that cup, definitely.
What big decisions did you have to make ahead of the game on the day as well? Because even team selection, I think Dylan McGeer was touch and go.
Yeah, the day of the game, I had a meeting with Dylan. It was about 10:30 in the morning, because Dylan had come off the previous week.
Yeah.
After maybe, I think it was in the
play full cup, about 20 minutes in.
Yeah, 20 minutes in, and Dylan was influential in the team. You know, in terms of, I actually believed at one point we had the best midfield three in the country.
I remember you saying that. Yeah.
You know, we were as good as anybody on the day. And I spoke with Dylan because I was concerned that he was going to make a decision. The fact that he thought he was okay.
Heart over head.
Yeah, but I didn't know, I wasn't 100% sure whether he could last 90 minutes. Mm. And I had a conversation and I said, Dylan, listen, you need to be, I know this is going to be the most difficult decision potentially that you might have, but you've got to do it for the right reasons. You've got to do it not for me, you've got to do it for your teammates. Can you look me in the eye now and can you last 90 minutes? And he said, yeah. Mm. And as soon as he said that, I had to take his word and I was happy because Dylan was someone who was like, he was mentally had to be in the right place. Because he's had a few injuries and I think mentally he'd always have a doubt in the back of his mind whether something was going to happen. But he said to me straight away, no, I'm ready. And that was good enough for me.
What was the game plan? What did you say to the team?
The game plan was we had to take the game to Rangers. Mm. We had to play our own game. We obviously respected that Rangers had some really good players in the team. But we knew they had weaknesses. We knew we worked on the set piece, believe it or not. We worked in the front post area with Tavernier. We knew that was an area where we could target. Also, we knew that we could exploit wide areas with them because of the amount of space that they do vacate because they play with Tavernier plays so high on one side.
Lee Wallace.
And Lee Wallace on the other side. You know, that was their strength. Mm-hmm. So we had to try and negate their strength by attacking in wide areas, and Stokes' goal comes from it. Well, the set pieces come from it. It couldn't have gone any better.
No, you started so well in the day, you're one up before you know it.
Aye, I was chasing my touch, I remember that. and just trying to fling my body a bit to try and get it back. But I was surprised with the start. Stokesy scoring, what a goal it was, by the way. But I just remember even the smoke from the flares was still there. But I was started like house on fire, and then you start thinking, oh no, too early, too early. But I, like the gaffer said, there was just a feeling about the place, and we were so focused going into the game. It was one of those that I just expected us to win until obviously the holiday goal went in. Yeah.
It's a real roller coaster of a match, isn't it? Because one up so early, and then later you're 2-1 down. With history on your shoulders and everything else.
I think when you look at it, and if you're a neutral, it was a brilliant game of football. You know, it had everything. You know, Rangers, and I got the sense, when Rangers went 2-1 up, I got the sense of they thought they'd done it. Mm. That's it now. We'll go on and win this game comfortably. That's the sense I got from the touchline. But they didn't realise that what I knew the players had, you know, because they had reserves that in a bucket load, especially this guy next to me, you know, they don't know when to beat. You know, and even at 2-1, we were still striving forward, we were still creating chances. And I knew that we'd get an equaliser. I just knew. I don't know why. I don't know how. I just had a belief in the players that they could drag themselves out of it.
It was Stokes again, 2-2.
It was a great ball for Hendo, because obviously Hendo was disappointed no starting. Great ball for him. He had amazing delivery, but there was something about that last 10 minutes. Five, he was like a man possessed. Mm-hmm. I've watched the game back about 10 times.
but he can I ask you that afterwards.
But there was just a moment in that game where he just grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck and got us going. Because at that point, I remember being gubbed, because it was a warm day. The emotion of it. I roomed with Jason, so we were up late. So I remember.
You can tell that.
But it was like it's a draining. Like it was a draining day, but. That I just remember seeing 5-8, and that's the reason we got the corner for the winner, because him busting through, and I think it was Keatsy that he passed to. But I just remember that last 10 minutes, if it wasn't for how he kind of grabbed the game, we probably wouldn't have got the corners and the goals.
Liam Henderson, you brought him off the bench, obviously.
Yeah.
What a difference he made. But you had options. Mm-hmm. Martin Boyle among the subs that day. It must have been hard to select who's going to come on and change this game.
Yeah, you know, in terms of the midfield, they were my biggest selection problems, because, you know, Hendo had played, you know, in the games before and he'd done well. You know, the team that I picked was the team that I thought could win against Rangers. That was the team that I went with. Boyle, in terms of, you know, he played a big part in that season. The way I played sometimes was not necessarily probably suited to Boyle being in the team at times as well. He was obviously a great addition in terms of to bring on if I needed it.
But at the time, obviously an inspired decision.
Hendo coming on, I knew from his set pieces and his deliveries, it was an asset for us. And luckily enough for us, you know, when he comes on, you know, he's put two of the most important crosses in the history of Hibernian Football Club right on the button where we wanted them, you know. And it's okay putting them there, you've got to be on the end, and Stokesy to be on the first one, you know. Knowing Stokesy would have been more concerned about his hair than anything. and obviously Dave, you know, he wasn't concerned at all. Dave would throw himself through a brick wall, Dave, you know. But it was for Dave to get it as well, you know, in terms of the captain and stuff like that. Yeah. You know, it was a great moment. It was a great moment. You know, it's still slow motion now, actually. What I can still vividly see them in my head, the slow motion.
BT Sport Pods. What do you remember, just, you know, the lead up to the goal, the corner coming in? Do you remember the moment?
I do, vividly, but I just remember thinking, oh, please. Because I wasn't even pleased to win, it was pleased because extra time was coming, and you just knew. Because my legs were cramping at that point, and that was genuinely all I was thinking, because we'd put so much into the game. But I knew with Hendo's delivery, we had a chance, and then just the best feeling ever. You couldn't write a better script. It was just a fairy tale ending, and it was too late for them to score. But at that moment, you're thinking, oh no, like if they score here, it'd be the worst ever. So after the celebration, everyone gets a bit carried away. It's about trying to keep the ball of the net because they've got players that can.
It was talking chaos, by the way.
Oh, it was nuts. That's the best scenes I've seen after a winning goal. Definitely, there's a clip from the posh sheets, the Rangers end, which is just one of the best videos that you'll see the celebration. So after that, it was about keeping the heat and trying to keep the ball in the net.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can only imagine the emotions you were going through. But when the final whistle blows, Alan, you know you've done it. Mm. You know, you've ended that long wait for Hibs as well. At the end of that season as well, of all seasons, with some other disappointments to go and do it.
Yeah.
Can you even begin to sum up your feelings, your thoughts? Because, by the way, it was also absolute bedlam on the pitch.
Yeah, at the end of the game, you know, it was, I was calm. I was more delighted for everybody around me than anything, you know, because they'd lived and breathed it, you know, especially a lot of the staff. You know, the players will always enjoy that moment for the rest of their lives. There's, you know, that was the bit that gave me the most enjoyment, was seeing the jubilation on the players, first and foremost for me. It was always the players. And then the staff and the fans, you know, the scenes were incredible. Mm. But then obviously the scenes turned very quickly because of what spilled onto the pitch. And
wasn't nice.
No, it wasn't. And that was maybe, it's hard to see, to find a down point in it. It would have been even better for us if we would have been able to enjoy that lap of honour.
Yeah.
Seeing the fans, being able to join in with them in Sunshine and Leith and all that would have just topped it all off, you know.
But you had to wait a while.
Yeah, we waited a while, and we were having big discussions with the police in terms of can we get the players on and to celebrate with the fans, and they were absolutely not a chance. You know, the inspector or the constable on that day had obviously, you know, seen as bottom, you know, and the way things had gone wrong. And he wasn't happy whatsoever, which I totally get.
Yeah.
You know, I totally get.
What was it like for the players? Because were you wondering, are we going to get to lift this trophy in front of these
guys? There was a bit of panic, but I was the first off, so I remember picking the ball up, kicking it as high as I could at full time. Bolted towards Paul Hanlon, because you then start thinking, oh, what they've been through. So I see Paul limping on. And then a steward's grabbed me and I've went in. So I'm just thinking, there's been a bit of a pitch invasion, but all the Hibs fans had spoken about it, whether rightly or wrongly, if we win the cup, we're on the pitch. So the constable or whoever must not have had Facebook, because you could feel it coming as well. You could feel that it was coming on, and then obviously things get a bit nasty. But obviously we'd have loved a lap honour. The wait was hard because we thought we'd heard Rangers were going up for the medals. You think, oh no, we're not getting the trophy here, which would have been horrible. But if you'd said to me in the morning, I try and put a positive spin on it, if you said to me in the morning, you're going to win the cup, but you're not going to get to get in half the park, I'd have taken it all day. So, and there was something about the sunshine on Leafers on the podium, which will probably never happen again anyway. So,
stirring that, wasn't it?
It was. It was the amount of people that have come up to me since that day and even sent me videos, not Hibs fans, fans of other clubs, and said, that's the best football anthem I've ever heard in my life, you know. And even to see it, the scenes were incredible.
Do you remember lifting?
The biggest thing that were in my memory from that day was seeing the police cordoned all the way around them, hearing Sunshine and Leaf. Mm. I remember the cup, you know, medal ceremony. I remember that, you know, well enough. But for me, the most vivid clip was hearing the fans sing that, which was just, it was a wow moment.
When did it set in? What you'd done, what you'd achieved? I assume people, Hibs fans, must still talk to you and try and talk to you about this day.
Oh,
it's still one of the greatest days ever.
I think it sunk in when we were walking down the Leaf Walk with the open top bus. That's when it sunk in for me, because I was a bit younger. there was less emotion attached. I was just buzzing. You couldn't have got me any happier. I remember going up, seeing my mum, dad, my partner, my sister. They were there. Then my grandpa's up a wee bit. So you're just buzzing. You're excited. Something you dream about since you were young. You've managed to achieve. But I think now if I managed to achieve it now, I would probably be a wee bit more emotional. But I was just excited for the party, the open top bus, just everything.
How was the party?
Oh, unrivaled. Amazing. But I was saying just before we came on air, I remember leaving the flat because we were going to Cameron House, the club looked after as well. We prepared perfect, but my flat was a mess. It was a dive. My apartment was an absolute dive. I was in a student block in Edinburgh. I was grossly underpaid at Hibs. So
it was a great deal to bring it.
I had the worst apartment in the team, but it was a great location, party location. So I didn't even tidy the flat. I didn't think we were going to win.
Everyone piles back, is that what you're telling me? So your party
So the nightclub obviously shuts, but the party's not, you're still as high as a kite, but everyone's the same, Dave, everybody. So we're just back to mine. And then the next thing you know, oh no, we need to go for the open top bus. So we've not slept a wink. Everyone is absolutely blitzed, and I don't regret one bit of it. I don't. All my family were there, my friends, and all the players' family and friends in this wee two-bed flat at the bottom of the Royal Mile. But the amazing thing was, we're in our suits, stinking. We actually walked it to Easter Road, and it's no far. So Abbey Hill to Easter Road, no far. It must have taken us an hour and 10 and 15.
You're all walking through.
I am walking. It was like something like a Little Britain or something. We've got cans, got our own sausage in a can, walking down with our suits on. And it was just, we'll never ever experience anything like it. Dave was getting his head slapped, and then the open top bus was just was just nuts. Nuts.
David Gray, you bring to the club.
Well, before that, we had a sponsors event at the club. But the players had to be there for, and I think it was like something like 11 o'clock. Believe me, you should have seen some of them were worse for wear. So they were turning up, obviously John's talking about they were in the suits, and yeah, some of the suits were honking. But it was a good job a lot of them had sunglasses on.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God. You know, but to be fair to them, they turned up, they did what they had to do, and then, you know, as far as I was concerned, carry on regardless then, carry on drinking.
It was a party of parties, it was an incredible occasion, what you did, making history, everything else. There was a job still to be done the next season to get promotion. The days after that final, you had a huge decision to make. You've already said you regret leaving, yeah. We know about it. Did you feel that you couldn't top that high?
Yeah, I just felt as if at the time, and whether I was thinking straight or not, obviously I'm not sure, or I wasn't, but I just didn't think even a promotion could eclipse that. And obviously then there was an interest from Rotherham, and I thought the championship, it's a good step for me, and it was just, everything about it was wrong.
Yeah. Did you think he was mad to be going when you heard the news? You can be honest now.
No, but then I thought I was leaving, so. So I had, at that time, I had a pretty good season, so there was a lot of interest in me. I had always ambition of playing in England. So I thought I was going, and when you're younger, you're a wee bit more naive. You think, when your agent gets a phone call or you get a phone call, you think, I'm off. Which is probably the best thing that happened. I needed the extra year. I did, definitely, because I nearly went to Forest, Nottingham Forest at the time. Who were probably not, I know they're now promoted, but they probably weren't in the best. There was a lot of change at the time. So I remember speaking honestly with Leanne and Graham and my agent and deciding, right, we'll do another year. And it was amazing because we were all in agreement that I was leaving the next year, and it was just another brilliant season. And thank goodness I didn't leave at that point.
I remember having the conversation with, obviously, when there was John was having, you know, doing what we knew he was going to do. And I spoke with the people at Everton because Leanne said, listen, you know, what do you want, what do you think he's worth? And I said, well, comfortably 5-6 million at the time. And And I spoke with someone at Everton and said, listen, this could be the best 5 or 6 million that you spend at the time. And it's always easy in hindsight now talking about it. You know, and I was surprised because for me, John's style was perfect for Everton in terms of what they were looking for. I was just surprised. You know, and he's obviously, he got the move eventually, you know, to Villa, which for me was probably one of the bargains that you'll ever
see. What a bit of business. What a story. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Sport Pods.